The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Now, an ivory is together in perfect harmony, side by side on my piano keyboard, all wide awake.
All right.
He got his own band. Check him out. Check him out.
I know you don't smoke weed. I know this. But I'm going to get you high today. Because it's Friday. You ain't got no job. And you ain't got shit to do.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And it's Friday. So pump it up, pump it up, pump it up. Here we go with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, this big envelope got slipped under my door this morning. On it, it said, do not bend. I wondered to myself, how am I going to pick it up? Thank you.
I like that one. I told that one to my kids. They went, Dad, that's such a dad joke. I'm like, no, that's a Duff joke. Thanks to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, of course, for delivering the laughs every single Friday. He is getting ready for the headlining tour of Europe that they are doing, but he's still taking time to call our little show with his little ridiculous dumb jokes. Lots of laughs from Duff. And speaking of laughs every Friday, how about Chris Tucker on the show today? Isn't that good? Good little segue there. We're talking about The Last. We're talking about Friday, his breakout role with Ice Cube. We're talking about the Rush Hour trilogy with Jackie Chan. And, of course, his great cameo with Samuel L. Jackson in Tarantino's Jackie Brown. Chris was also great friends with Michael Jackson. Spent a lot of time at the Neverland Ranch before Michael died. You'll hear how they met and how Chris found out about MJ's passing. And, of course, we're talking stand-up. What inspires Chris Tucker? The influence that Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor had on him. And why he still loves doing stand-up comedy to this day. And you know, I asked about the possibility of Rush Hour 4, which I believe is happening. You hear what Chris has to say about that. Chris Tucker is coming up. Chris Tucker's Friday Rush Hour show. See what I did there? Combine the two. Also coming up is the next leg of Fozzy's Judas Rising tour. Actually, it's all over the place. We are going to be on the road all summer long in multiple countries. For all the dates, VIP meet and greets, and ticket information, go to FozzyRock.com. There's so much cool stuff happening at our VIP meet and greets. We do a mini concert for all the fine people that come to the shows. Do a couple covers. Do a couple songs you're not going to hear later on that night. All the hits, everything you like. Then we meet you, we greet you, we hang out. All of that information at FozzyRock.com. But the summer starts July 12th in Oshkosh at Rock USA, 13th at the Cadot Rock Fest in Cadot, Wisconsin. Or is it Cadot? I don't know. I'm Canadian, so I'm not sure. 14th is Peoria Riverfront in Peoria. 15th, Belvedere, Illinois at the Apollo Theater. And then we head over to Europe at the Pheasant Festival in Hungary on the 26th of July. Prague is on the 27th. 28th, the Rock of Ages Festival in Sebron, Germany. 29th, headlining show at Zurich, Switzerland. The 31st, Rock Planet in Italy. Pinarello di Servia. August 1st in Slovenia. August 3rd, Wacken, August 4th, Berlin, Germany, August 6th, Bochum, Germany, August 7th, Aschaffenburg, August 9th, Leyendas de Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain, the 11th is the Alcatraz Festival in Belgium, the 12th, Bloodstock in Canton Park in Trent, Derbyshire. We're going to be playing that. So all of those shows and ticket information at FozzyRock.com. And then we come back to the United States for the Judas Rising Tour, the next leg, August 24th, it starts in Atlanta, Georgia. We're taking out Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir. The Stir will be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Go to FozzyRock.com for all those dates in the States. Tickets are on sale now. We're heading everywhere. We're going to Huntsville, Clarksville, Tennessee, Little Rock, Minneapolis, Fargo, Columbus, Ohio, Cincinnati, Huntington, West Virginia, Tampa, Orlando. So many shows. I think there's 25 shows. I'm not going to list them all here. So go check that out. And we're also doing the Rock Allegiance show in Camden, New Jersey on October 6th. Lots of Fozzy Rock coming up. But in the meantime, in the between time, let's have some laughs with Chris Tucker on Talk is Jericho. Right here, right now, it's the Friday Rush Hour. Let's go, man!
That's right, Lee. For the last 3 years, I have studied the ancient teachings of Buddha, earning 2 black belts in Wushu martial arts, spending every afternoon at the Hong Kong Garden Massage Parlor on Pico and Bundy. I am half Chinese, baby.
If you're half Chinese, I'm half black.
I'm your brother, and I'm fly. You down with that, Snoopy? That's dope, isn't it?
Sorry, Lee, you can't be black. There's a height requirement. Same as riding a Matterhorn.
So we're here with Chris Tucker, and this is great because this is actually where you went to high school.
Yeah.
Columbia High School.
Columbia High, yep.
So is that like nine? See, I'm from Canada, so we say grade 9 to grade 12. Was it freshman to?
8th to 12th grade.
8th to 12th grade.
Yeah, 8th to 12th grade.
So
yeah.
Go through it with me, though. So 9th is freshman.
Yeah.
10 is?
Well, 8th is, what is that? Freshman?
I think 9 is freshman.
Sub? Oh, yeah. 8th is sub.
Sub?
I think, yeah, it was sub. Like, they used to go, what's up, sub? They used to talk about us and stuff.
Okay, so 8th is sub. 9th is freshman.
It's freshman, yeah. And then
10 is what? Sophomore?
Sophomore and then senior, yeah.
Sophomore, junior, and senior.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't understand. Like, junior sounds like it's not as important as sophomore. Sophomore sounds like, you know, you're in the army or something. It should be the second last one.
Yeah,
it should be. That was my...
All I remember is seniors. I'm about to get out of here. So we got this last one.
So this library was here, like you actually... Do you remember being in here in high school?
I never came in the library. I don't know if it was here or not. I was in the principal's office. I thought I was in trouble when I was walking down the hall. I was like, oh, Lord, I'm in trouble again. Everything came back. So I never really came... They moved stuff around. I'm pretty sure it might have been in the vicinity somewhere.
Yeah. So, but when you came here today, is this the first time you've been back since...
I've been back before, but it's been years.
It's been years.
So it's every time I come in, it's just like it feels good. You know?
It's funny because I went back to my high school a couple years ago, and I couldn't believe how small it was.
Yeah, the lockers, right? Everything looked small. Like, man, you know.
So. When you're a kid, it's huge. You know, it's your world. You come back, it's like, oh my gosh, this is my high school.
Yeah.
Like, it's the smallest ever.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. When I went back to my elementary school, I was like, man, how did we even fit in here? Everything was small, but yeah, everything looks small and tight, but you're right, it was a big world back then.
Did you get in trouble ever? Like, what kind of a student were you in school?
I got in a lot of trouble. Not a lot of trouble, I just was happy. You know, I wanted to make things fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the class was boring, and we would tell jokes, and I would say something, and then we would have some fun, and the teacher would be like, calm down. So sometimes it was boring most of the time,
yeah,
so I
yeah.
wanted to keep it
light.
Were
you like the class clown?
I was kind of like the class clown. I was like, you know, just wanted to keep it fun. But it was a lot of class clowns, you know. I was just one of them. You
one
know,
of
in
many?
High school, it was a couple of, all my boys was funny. And
yeah,
all
yeah.
of them had jokes, and all of them would do something, and calling the teacher by his first name, stuff like that.
Now is like a little bit more, like, I don't think you're allowed to do that like in high school.
Yeah, you can't.
But when
do
you
that.
Go to like college, you're supposed to call them by their first names, right?
Oh, I didn't go to college. So
okay.
I guess so, yeah.
I remember like, you know, the first, I went to like, it was called Creative Communications. So it was like journalism school.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time the guy was like, oh, don't call me Mr. Johnson, you call me Jim.
Yeah.
This isn't teacher student, we're all on the same level. If you don't show up for class, I don't give a shit. I'm Jim.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, Jim, calm down, you know, right? So did you have, like, any teachers in school that you remember that were cool or that were kind of jerks?
Well, you couldn't call him by his first, you know, we used to call the wood tech guy by his first name. We used to call him Silas. And he would be pissed off. He would turn around, who said that? Who called me that? Who that? And everybody would be like, well, no, we was working, you know, so it was so much fun. But everybody was, I had all great teachers, thank God. They were all, they really wanted me to learn. They really wanted me to get out of school. They didn't want to see me no more, and I didn't want to see them anymore. So they really wanted me to keep going and get out of school. So all of them was great, even though they were kind of hard on me at times.
Yeah.
But I needed it. So
sure. Did you know when you were in high school what you wanted to do with your
I
life?
I was blessed. I found out at an early age that I wanted to be a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I was class comedian, class clown, but you know, going on stage is a whole nother thing. You know, you have to put it in art form. So one time I went to the principal's office, it was on the third hall, and the third hall principal's secretary, she was over the talent show, and she said they was paying like $30 to host a talent show. They was looking for a host to host talent shows for $30. So I wanted that $30. And I was interested in hosting too. You know, I was already thinking about stand-up comedy because I grew up watching Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy.
Mm.
So I was like, this may be a way to get into, you know, stand-up comedy and then maybe acting one day. So I told her I would do it. And she knew I was kind of, you know, because I was always in the office, always getting into some, you know, trouble. So she said, well, we'll give you $30. Are you going to host it? I said, yeah, because they had music acts. They was really focusing on the music acts. They weren't focusing on the hosts and the comedian and all that stuff. That was whatever. We just want somebody to bring the music acts up.
Right.
Which was Silk, one of the big stars. They were a big R&B group.
Yeah, they went to school here?
Yeah, they went to school here. Wow. And I brought them on stage. And MC Shy D, big-time rapper at the time, and a lot of other great guys.
Pretty talented
came
school.
Pretty big. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of they came from all over the state and all over the county. So, and then I was, you know, I went up on stage, told my first joke, and everybody started laughing. And I said, "This is what I want to do the rest of my life."
Do you remember what that joke was?
I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something to do with the school.
Yeah,
like I said something like the toilets don't work, the bathrooms don't work, something like that, or we got roaches or something crazy.
Like, everyone's like,
and they was like, oh, yeah, it was something that everybody knew about.
Uh-huh.
And I hit a chord, and that was my career. Slammed started right then and there.
You mentioned that you were a Richard Pryor fan and an Eddie Murphy fan. Yeah. I think we're very similar ages. That Eddie Murphy Delirious cassette is still, like, anybody from our generation knows that.
Oh, yeah.
That whole routine, all that material, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
it's amazing because, like, there's not, like, there's still comedy albums in this day and age, but from the early 80s, if whatever, everybody had that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. My friend up the street, a family friend up the street, he had the tape of it.
Yeah.
Because I think he got HBO first. He said we got HBO first, but I think he got it some kind of way. And he brought it down, and we watched it. And he had that red suit on.
Yeah.
He was like, man, where you get this from? He had a leather suit. And he was like, yeah, we got it. I got it. And I said, oh, man, it just ever since then, it was just like, you know,
I learned a lot from that. Like, you know, I grew up, like I said to you earlier, in you know, suburban Winnipeg, Canada. Mm-hmm. And I remember I wasn't really familiar with what welfare was. I didn't really know. But when the kid drops the ice cream and is like, you dropped your ice cream, you're on the welfare, you can't afford it. And I was like, what is welfare, Dad?
Yeah.
So, you know, thanks, Eddie, for teaching me about welfare.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have no ice cream. You didn't get no. You didn't get no. You didn't get no. You didn't get no. Because you are on the welfare and you can't afford it. You can't afford it. You can't afford it.
Did you, throughout the years, have you had a chance to meet Eddie? And
oh, yeah, yeah. I'm friends with him. I just saw him last week.
Really?
Up at his house in Beverly Hills. And he knows I'm still a big fan, you know.
Sure.
We hang out, and now we're like buddies now. So it's great growing up, watching somebody and becoming friends with them. And,
yeah. That's a pretty cool feeling.
It's a really great
Someone that was like your hero, and then you end up, you know, now you're texting with them all the time.
Michael Jackson, who can sing, and is a good-looking guy, but ain't the most masculine fellow in the world. See, but that's Michael's hooks, his sensitivity. Mike walk up to girls and they stay being the audience. He say, is it all right if I come down there and sing to you? And the women go, ah!
Can I come down there?
Then if you don't scream, Mike will get real sensitive and cry on your ass. If you hear that record, She's Out of My Life, Mike will go,
so I've learned that love's not possession. And I've learned love won't win. Love needs expression, but I learned to wait. Tito, get me some tissue. Jermaine, stop teasing.
Do you ever talk to Eddie about comedy? Like, does he ever allude to wanting to do that ever again, do you think?
Yeah, we talk all the time, and I think he's definitely... one day he may do it again, I think.
I was like, if he did that,
I would love for him to do it again.
If he did that Delirious tour, just some of that and took it on the tour.
Yeah.
Arena size, right?
Definitely, man. Yeah, he still got it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lose it. You just got to work it. You know, it's like golf. You got to get on the stage and work.
And practice, yeah. How about you? Do you still do stand-up?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm on
Return
tour.
Return to it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been touring for the last, I don't know how many years. 10 years or something like that, maybe 12. But I never stop doing it. I always tour and always do stand-up comedy. I accidentally got away from it when I was doing movies.
Right.
Constantly, I didn't have enough time. But now I got a lot of time to get on stage and tour around the country. And I toured out of the country around the world. So I love it.
Because you became such a huge movie star. And a lot of comedians, when they do that, like Eddie Murphy or Bill Murray or Steve Martin or all those type of guys, Robin Williams,
yeah,
he came back a few times, but they kind of drop out of stand-up comedy for whatever reason.
Yeah. When, you know, sometimes when the movie stuff or TV stuff kicks off, it takes up all your time, and it kind of, that's what happened to me. My movie career kind of shot, you know, out of the box, and I was doing a lot of movies back-to-back. So to stand-up, I just didn't have enough time, and I kind of, you know, got away from it, but now it's like, you know, that's what got me to the movies, and I realized that, so that's why I'm going to continue to always work, get on a stage whenever I can, you know, go to the local comedy clubs. I was just in L.A., went to the Comedy Store, and went to another club called the Ha Ha's, and man, I love it. You know, it's like the old days, you know, just staying up all night in comedy clubs, you know.
I love the name of the clubs, Ha Ha's.
Oh, yeah, Comedy Store, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Those great ones.
Laugh Out Loud, all types of, yeah.
But there's something to be said, like, performing in front of a live audience.
Yeah.
Whether there's 10 people there or 10,000, however big it gets.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're filming movies, you don't get that gratification.
Yeah.
It's very long, tedious days, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's right, you know, something, you know, being live is magical, man, because stuff can happen. You can ask somebody a question in the audience, and that may take you to another something, you know, joke or something you want to talk about, and then somebody might yell something out, or, you know, you might have to find something to talk about, what's going on right, you know, right then and there in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's great. Live is always better, you know.
What do you do? Like, do you ever have people heckle you? Did you ever have hecklers?
Oh, yeah, you get a little bit of all of it. You get people want to talk and ask you a question in the middle of your show and say stuff, but, you know, you just have to handle them, because you got the mic, you know. You take care of it, you know.
If you got the mic, you always got the upper hand.
You always got the upper hand, man. You always got the upper hand. But you got to be prepared. Make sure you're prepared.
Let's talk about your movie career, because obviously Rush Hour, just three of the biggest movies of the late 90s, early 2000s.
Thank you.
But it started out, the first time I saw you was Jackie Brown.
Oh, yeah. Jackie with Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
That was a great cameo with Sam Jackson. Mm-hmm. And
you got put in the trunk?
Yeah, they Sam Jackson killed me in the trunk, man, that movie. I don't know why. But that was a great opportunity to work with Quentin Tarantino and Sam Jackson. And then I got my first starring role with Fridays. Co-star with Ice Cube.
Right.
And, man, that was my shot. You know, I knew it was going to be my shot to get into the movie business in a big way.
I need to borrow your car right quick. What kind of shit is that? Most people want to borrow sugar or even ketchup. You want to borrow my car? Hell no. Hold on.
Well, let me borrow a joint.
You need to borrow a job with your broke ass. Always trying to smoke up somebody's shit. The hell on, Felicia.
Remember that.
Remember it. Write it down. Take a picture. I don't give a f***.
Bye, Felicia.
So I made sure I was prepared, and you know, all the times in the comedy clubs and all the shows in the comedy clubs and all the shows on the road touring, you know, all those things paid off, you know, with my improvisation, you know, with that movie, you know, coming up with stuff on the set, on the spot, because it was a movie that, you know, it was a low-budget movie, pretty much. It cost like $2 million to do. And, you know, they really wanted me to, you know, come up with a lot of stuff and really relied on the characters and stuff like that. So that was a fun one to do, because I was allowed to do whatever, you know, to do whatever, be physical and just do all the
things. So you had the right to just improv if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Was it like, do you do like five takes of the same scene with different jokes each time?
Yeah, you know, and we didn't have a lot of money, so the director said, F. Gary Gray, who just did the big Fast and Furious movies and Straight Out of Compton, he said, you know, we only got two takes because we don't have a bunch of money. We only got a certain amount. That's when everybody was shooting on film.
Mm-hmm.
So we only got two takes. So I just had two times to get it right. So I had to be prepared, had to be ready. And if you don't get it in two times, they move on, because we didn't have enough money to stay there all day long. Like when we did Rush Hour, we could do it 50 times, 50
right.
takes. So yeah, we had to be ready. It was only, you know, we only had $2 million. It only took 20 days to shoot. And, you know, that's what I'm most proud of, because I was prepared. I was ready, and then people considered it a classic. And
it's just become a total classic.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so it's pretty.
Has there been three now Fridays?
Three. Yeah. Three.
Is there another one?
They want to do another one. The fans want another one. So everybody's on me. Like, are you going to do another one? Are you going to do another one? So I said, I don't know. I didn't even hear about it. It was a rumor out that everybody wanted another one.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll see what happens. So
when you're talking about having the right to improv with
F. Gary Gray. Yeah.
With Tarantino, it's not that way. It's more specific, say what's on the page type of a vibe.
Yeah, he's so good. Quentin, the way he writes so good. You want to say what he says because it's so natural. It just rolls off your tip of your tongue. Mm. So his writing skills is so great. So I almost verbatim said, you know, in Jackie Brown, the movie, I said verbatim what he wrote because it was so good and it was so into characters. Mm-hmm. And so working with writer-directors like him, David O. Russell, Luc Besson, who I did Fifth Element with, those
amazing
guys are just
yeah.
great, you know, to work with because they know exactly what they want and they'll tell you, you know, exactly what they want. So.
That was a great movie, too, Fifth Element.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of fun doing that one. You know, the character, putting on all the clothes and the hair, the makeup, everything. It was scary because I was such a young kid, and I was like, oh, man, this is way out there. But that's one of my favorite roles.
Was that one before Rush Hour?
That was before Rush Hour. We filmed that in 96, came out in 97.
Gotcha.
And this year is the 20th anniversary of Fifth Element, so... We just saw it last week in LA outside at a big screening and Mila Jovovich was there and it was a lot of fun.
Hot.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she is.
But now let's talk about Rush Hour with Jackie Chan. Like obviously I was a huge Jackie Chan fan in the 80s, early 90s, Rumble in the Bronx,
yeah.
which is great. They filmed
Me
it in
too.
Vancouver. You can totally tell.
Yeah.
There's not too many mountains in the
that's
Bronx.
Right. Yeah, they sure did. Yeah.
But it seemed like Rush Hour was finally his big coming out party in the States here and this pairing with you. When did you start hearing about that? Did you know Jackie Chan's work?
Yeah.
How did that all come to be?
I had Rumble in the Bronx on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
I had it on DVD. I had it on VHS. So I was a big fan, and I just thought he was the coolest. The stuff he did was nobody else did it in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like Bruce Lee, you know, but on another level with what he did with the comedy side.
Mm-hmm.
So when the opportunity came that I could do a movie with him, you know, with New Line Cinema, I was like, yeah, it'd be perfect because I could do action and I could do comedy because I'm very physical. So it was just like, you know, a blessing, man, that both of us came together at that time because nobody never seen a Asian guy and a black guy together. You saw Lethal Weapon. You saw Black Guy and White Guy. You saw 48 Hours. You saw Black and White.
It was always black and white. Yeah.
It was always black and white. We never seen Asian and black. So for me, it was like perfect combination to play off of the different cultures, to play off the physicality of everything and the fight scenes and my comedy improvisation stuff. I thought it was the perfect opportunity to
Was there a lot of improv with him as well?
A lot of it.
Got a great sense of humor.
Wah, boo, yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely not. You know, nobody know war. Everybody knows war. Who? Yeah. Well, it is a good for absolutely nothing. Good God, you all. It ain't you all, it's y'all. 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 You sound like a karate movie. Y'all.
Y'all.
Say it from right here with some soul. Y'all.
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 He was so great to follow whatever I was doing. It was like a lot of that stuff was just off script and... Whatever I did, he just followed me. If I danced, Jackie would just follow. He would move when I moved. So that's what made it so great. He was such a great mimic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the action he did, you know, I was mimicking him. He would pull me and swing me and kick. And he would tell me, kick, jump. And I would, because I didn't know none of that. And it was unbelievable.
You became an action hero.
I became an action hero,
in a lot of ways, right?
He sure did.
So when you're talking about those fight scenes and the stunts and the choreography, does Jackie do a lot of that stuff still at that point in time?
He still did it. Yeah, he still does it. And Jackie, he's just incredible. He's in great shape even now. But back then, he was doing all of it. He was jumping off of stuff and, jumping on stuff, and you know, I had to do it too because he wanted me to do it. You know, if I'm doing it, you need to do it too, so we can keep it real. And I was like, okay, all right. So yeah, he was the real, he's the real deal.
So tell us about some of the stunts that you did, like some of the fight scenes, like stuff that you had to do.
Well, I jumped on and off some bus because I was all into it because I knew I was gonna, you know, I was had to be ready because he was, you know, he was Jackie Chan. So the fight scenes in Rush Hour 1, we was up in the top of the restaurant and the guy kicked me and I said, which one of y'all kicked me? I did all that and I didn't get hurt. Only thing I got a rug burn on my back because Jackie pulled me and I was like, ah. So the only thing that happened was a rug burn. But I did all the fight scenes we did and flipping me over and all that stuff and hanging off of some wires and stuff like that. Mm. And we did all that stuff. So, yeah, it was good.
It's funny, you're a stand-up comedian and now you're hanging on wires.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We sure did do that, yeah, with Jackie. So,
do you still talk to Jackie?
Yeah, I just saw him. I was just in Shanghai at the Shanghai Film Festival, and I enjoyed that. Me and my son went out there, and he had a big stunt, a war show for all the stuntmen he worked with all his career, and it was a lot of them, a lot of great guys, a lot of guys I knew back from the first Rush Hour. And so then I saw him in L.A., and we're talking about, you know, seeing what else we could maybe do something else together again. And yeah, I love seeing him because he always give you gifts. He always got something, you know, suitcase of stuff. Like, here, take this. You'll get it. Thank you, Jackie.
Was his English fairly good?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's great. You know, he's just a great, great guy, yeah.
Because he's a really big star in China, like as far as even like singing.
Yeah.
Wise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's huge. He's the main guy over there. Yeah, great singer, big singer over there, you know.
Yeah, he's does like a superstar.
Yeah, like millions and billion people listen to one of his songs on the internet. What he told me about one time, and they was just he's huge over there.
I was wondering that because I was just looking earlier today at Rush Hour and the box office, and the third one actually did more business than the first one did as far as overall box office. It's like, it seems to me that there would be plans or talks about doing a fourth one.
Yeah, they want to do another one, and we're talking about it, and you know, hopefully we can get it together because you know, we work well together, good chemistry together, and so it'd be fun to do another one with him. So we'll see.
So let's talk about someone else you had a great friendship and great chemistry with. Talking about Michael Jackson. I want to know how you guys first met and became friends, Chris. But before we get to that, I want to talk about a friend of mine who's kept me in the ring and on stage with Fozzy at the peak of my abilities. I'm talking about Diamond Dallas Page and his DDP yoga program. It's the reason why I'm headed back to New Japan Pro Wrestling to kick the shit out of Tetsuya Naito at Dominion on June 9th in Osaka. Only available on newjapanworld.com. Watch me win the Intercontinental Championship from him. 10th time. Thanks to Dallas. And Dallas's program, not just helping me, helping tons of wrestlers and athletes worldwide and thousands of people around the world as well, and it can help you too. Just download the DDP Yoga Now app and get started. And you guys know that DDP Yoga is so much more than just the workouts. Dallas gives you everything you need to get on that road and stay on the road to healthier living, and it's all right there on the DDP Yoga Now app. Literally hundreds of workouts, and you can also do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. You can do it wherever you are and whenever you want. Doesn't get much easier or more convenient than that. Plus, the app has loads of recipes and cooking tips, and Dallas will even motivate you on the days you need it most. The app has a Bluetooth monitor so you can track your progress and your calories burned. And you can try all this for free for 7 days when you download the DDP Yoga app. And then when you love DDP Yoga like I do, you can get 20% off an annual subscription at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You got to take advantage of this crazy offer. 7 days of the DDP Yoga app for free. 1 week for free. Get on the path to healthier living now. Download the DDP Yoga app and use it for free for 7 days, and then get 20% off an annual DDP Yoga Now app subscription at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take back your life. Own your life. Do it today at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best physical and mental shape you've ever been in, and go do it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And come on Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea to do live workouts with DDP on board the ship. Lots of cool stuff happening. ddpyoga.com/Jericho.
Excuse me, brother. What we call drug, the 74th Street Baptist Church, we call a sin.
Well, around here, between Normandy and Weston, we call this here a little twin.
Wow.
Nigga.
Let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Michael Jackson. When I was watching You Rock My World video, and just kind of remembered about all that. It seems like you were pretty tight with Mike.
Oh, yeah, Mike was, I mean, he was such a nice, generous person. He was just, you know, I met him through a mutual friend, and then, you know, we met one time, and we met, the first time we met, it was just the best, because he was a fan of mine, and I was a huge fan of his, and he knew it, and because all of my movies, you could tell I do something Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
you're
dancing like him, singing like whatever.
Yeah, and I can't. And anytime his music come on, I gotta dance. I gotta do Michael Jackson dance.
Get closer, oh, get closer. I'm burning now. Just love me. You're good enough. Keep on to the four stars. Don't stop till you're good enough. Keep on to the four steps. Oh, come on, guys. Come on to the four steps.
So he was just a great guy, great person. I thought he was, to be as big as he was, huge as he was, as, you know, mega superstar, he really was a really kind person, really kind to me. Mm-hmm. And I just enjoyed hanging around, just being around him, man, growing up, you know, meeting your hero like him.
Once
and
again,
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, sure.
It's just great, man.
Where did you guys hang out?
We hung out, you know, I went to Neverland a lot because I love, Neverland was unbelievable.
Tell us about
this
that.
This place, man, was unbelievable. He had animals. He had tigers. What did he have? He had lions and elephants and zebras. And then he had go-karts. He had Ferris wheels. He had the Yellow Brick Road. You know, I mean, it was everything. Movie theater, candy. All that. It was like another world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and him being there is just makes it even more special, you know, hanging out with him and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was just magical, man. He was just a great, great person hanging around. So.
How did the Rock My World video come about?
Michael asked me to be in it. It was, I think it was right after Rush Hour 2. He asked me to be in the video, and I was like, I thought he was playing or something. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I want you to be in my video, Rock My World. And man, the first day, we had so much fun, and his acting skills was incredible, because the improvisation, we just riffed the beginning. If you ever see the whole Rock My World video.
Because it's got a big, long intro, right?
Yeah, big, long intro, and we just had so much fun, man. Me messing around with him, and as soon as I said something, he said something right back. And I said, man, we should have did a whole movie together. I wish we could have did a whole movie together, because he was such a
I always wondered why he didn't do a movie. It seemed like that would be the logical progression for him.
Yeah, he considered his videos as movies, short
right,
movies. And they were short movies. But, yeah, he wanted to. He wanted to do movies, because he could have. He was a great actor.
So. Were you close with him even towards the end of his life as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't see him as much because he was busy. But and then he lived out of the country for a while. But we were definitely close. And whenever we talked, you know, it was just great. You know, it was just good to hear his voice. And if I could meet up with him, that was even better, you know.
I had Slash on the show, and he was telling me, like, Michael was the consummate showman, always into the presentation and obviously the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
And they did I think it was in China or Japan or something like this, where Slash did the solo on Black and White. Oh. And Michael said, don't stop playing. No matter what anybody says, you keep playing the solo. And there's a famous clip online where it looks like Slash is going off script and just won't stop playing. And Michael's yelling at him, telling him not to play. And they just shut the lights out and shut the whole show down. And that's like, Slash was like, yeah, I had no idea. He just said, don't stop playing no matter what until I tell you to stop. And then people were coming and tell him to stop. But he was like pulling like a gag on the crowd.
Yeah.
But just for his own, like, this will be really cool if we do this.
Yep. Yeah.
Just, you know, I like that kind of that show business element they had at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a genius. He's definitely on another level in every way. So.
Yeah. So we're here in Atlanta, like we said, and this is the high school that you went to. You still live in Atlanta?
Yeah, I moved back probably, like, I lived in L.A. 25 years, something like that. I moved back home 3-4 years ago. And I love it. You know, my family's here. And, you know, I decided to come back and been
which
enjoying
it. Which is kind of strange, not strange, but most people go to L.A., stay in L.A.
Yeah.
What is it about Atlanta that made you want to come back here?
You know, I mean, I could, you know, these days you can travel, be in L.A. in 4 hours and stuff like that. But, you know, just family. I just wanted to spend more time with family. Something told me to come home. And also, you know, with my stand-up, I can go anywhere in the world from Atlanta and do my stand-up or in the country. So I just decided to come home, and then I go to LA when I need to. So,
So we're going to go today to Camp Spotlight, which is, tell me about it. It's like a it's like an art school, like Fame. Like, I'm going to live forever.
Yeah, sort of. It does a lot of things, but it's a performing arts school, and it's in Decatur, where I'm from. And a lot of the kids, we sponsor a lot of the kids, 60 kids to go to the camp, 60 kids at the camp. And it's just, it teaches kids how to, if you know, they want to act or perform, performing arts. And also, they want to do other stuff like makeup, writing, different things like that, behind the scenes stuff, production stuff, and if they want to be in the business. So we sponsor that for them to go there, and then they have a big performance at the end of the camp, and the parents come and see the show, and it's just like, it's fantastic. So yeah, all of them have headshots, so take them through the steps of you know, becoming an actor or whatever they want to do, direct or write. So first they get headshots, and the foundation pays for that, and other things, and yeah, it's just a great, you know, it's just for someone who has a dream of being an actor or entertainer to touch and to be in at a place that they can get closer to their dream, like I did. You know, I had a dream here in high school when I found out what I wanted to do, and but I, you know, if it wasn't for the Comedy Act Theater, this comedy club that opened up, as soon as I graduated in 1990, I graduated, and this comedy club opened up downtown Atlanta. And I was able to go to a real comedy club and perform, and that really solidified, you know, my career, because I got in, you know, I knew I could go from there and get information about going to L.A. And pursue my career. So this camp is one of those things that you know, that I wish I had, but thank God the comedy club opened up, you know, and I had that, and that took me to L.A.
So when you see these kids, you like, do you see yourself, like, when you were younger, like, oh my gosh, these kids, like, this guy's good, and this kid could be a dancer, like,
oh yeah, yeah,
they inspire you.
I see it in their eyes, you know, the ones who have the passion and the love, because I, you know, I had a passion for stand up and a passion for one day acting and stuff like that, and that's what it takes, you know, and dreaming, you know, I dreamed about, you know, doing that. I dreamed about meeting Michael Jackson one day, and it happened. So I know dreams do come true, and dreams are powerful. Dreamed about working with Eddie Murphy and meeting him one day, and I did all that, everything I dreamed and even and beyond. So, I mean, dreams come true. So I see that in the kids' eyes, and I know that it's possible because it happened to me, and with passion and love and for what you're doing. You know, it's not money. It's not any of that stuff. It's just that the real wealth, the true wealth, is that passion and that love that you have for something in you. You're already rich if you got that, and you're just pursuing your dreams.
Great.
That's true wealth. True
Great
wealth.
Point. Yeah, like you said, like, if there's money to be made, you want to make it. But if you're doing anything for money, it's never real.
That's right. It's secondary.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I never thought about money before. I always thought about what's the next time I can get on stage? What's the next joke I can come up with to make people laugh? That made me feel better than any amount of money I ever made or any car, any house and all that stuff. You know, going to the premiere of a movie, knowing you gave your all and knowing you was prepared and everybody's laughing in the theaters and you're like, oh man, that feeling is no greater feeling. And no greater wealth than that feeling.
Right. Cause, you know, would you ever do that? Like when a movie came out, let's say Rush Hour 2, would you ever like put a hat on and go in the back of the theater and sneak in?
I did it all the time. I did it the first Rush Hour. I went in a theater, a 1,200-seater in New York City, and it was it wasn't even no seats available. I had to sit in the aisle. And this one guy said, would you move out the way, man? I'm trying to see Chris Tucker. And I was like, oh. He was telling me to move out of the way to see me. And I was like, oh, man, this is cool. And they were laughing, and they were, and the theater was packed out. It was no greater feeling. I do it all the time. And they had a screening of a anniversary of Fridays 2 years ago, something like that. I went to that, and people was in there laughing. And I, you know, I had my hat down. And you know, the other night, I went to Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. They knew I was there, but it was just, this is no greater feeling when they laugh and, you know, the whole time you're on the screen. It was like, about time he came on the screen. So it was just, it's best.
Were you ever, like, nervous? Like, oh, my God, I hope people think this is funny.
Yeah, you know, you always want to know if did I hit it right or did time it in the right, because you have to wait months later to see if it works. So you always, like, you're like, oh, I could have did that better. Oh, they didn't laugh as much at that. Or they blew up laughing on that. So you always, you know.
Yeah.
Critiquing things.
But
so.
when you film a movie, like it's like I've written some books. When you write a book and you rewrite it and you do another take or whatever it may be, after a while you're like, I don't even know if this is funny or not anymore. Because the first time you say it,
yeah,
it's fun. And then do it this way, try it this way, let's take it this way, take it here. And you're like, oh my gosh, like,
yeah,
I don't know, is this still good?
Yeah. You always have some doubts. And that's why I love working in the comedy clubs for years, because you kind of know what's funny and what's not, and the timing and all that stuff. You kind of, you did it so much in the comedy clubs and you prepare so much, you kind of know what the hit, what comedy beats to hit, and you hope they work. And then when they work, oh man, it feels so good. You know?
So you mentioned when you started the comedy club here, and how did you hone your act, like, for your style of comedy? Like, because you have to know who you are as a comedian, as an actor, as a musician, whatever. Did it take you a while to kind of figure out what Chris Tucker comedy was?
Yeah, it took years. You know, it took a year, 2 years, something like that. And then you see so much comedy, you see other comedians, because it's a community for sure. It's definitely a community because, you know, you see so many funny guys come through the comedy club, so many good guys, and they have different styles. They're talking about different stuff. And then you watch that, and then you say, okay, you know, what do I need to work on? What do I need to talk about? And then you get on stage, and then you work, and you get on the road, and you work. So you just get better and better because everybody else is so good, especially in the 90s. Everybody was good. So you have to really pick up your game and really work hard. And you're working with great comedians on the road, so you gotta make sure you're ready because they're going to blow up the spot right before you get up there. And if you're not, you know, ready, they're going to boo you because that guy just came on and was incredible.
Just killed it, yeah.
So you got to really be on top of your game. So.
Who were some of the guys you mentioned in the 90s that were your peers at the time that came up at the same time you did?
Bernie Mac was definitely one that was just unbelievable. Great comedian, great guy. And, you know, he always headlined when I was on the show, thank God. So I didn't have to go after him. And, you know, Bill Bellamy, a lot of great, great comedians. Martin Lawrence was a little bit, you know, already had kind of blew up before I came out there.
But he was huge.
Yeah, he was huge. He had a TV show and he was hosting Def Jam. And I started, you know, I got my big break in Def Jam.
Really?
Yeah, I got discovered at this competition, Black Bay Area competition in Oakland. I had just moved to L.A. in 92.
It was called the Black Bay Area.
The Black Bay Area competition.
Now, can you imagine if there was the White Bay Area
competition? Yeah, man, yeah, it would be a dimmy. All hell would break loose.
I was thinking about, like, BET, if there was the White Entertainment Television.
I know.
You'd be in big trouble.
Exactly.
So but you went to the Black Bay Area?
Yeah, I went to the Black Bay Area competition, and I got disqualified because I didn't have enough time, you know. I had probably at that time like 3 or 4 minutes of good, really good material, and that took years to get.
Oh, wow. And you had to go a certain amount of time?
You had to go. I went to the next round, the second round. I made it through the first round, and then the second round you had to do like 7 minutes or 15 minutes, something like that. I got disqualified, but as soon as I got disqualified, you know, the scout for Def Comedy Jam, one of the producers, Bob Sumner, came backstage and said, I want you on Def Jam. You got just enough time to open up for Def Jam, and I had like 4 or 5 minutes. I said, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So I got disqualified for competition, but then I got a national, you know, cable network, you know, HBO show to do. So, you know, it's all, I never won a competition in my life, but I always got, you know, I got the movie. If I didn't get the TV show, I got Fridays. If I didn't get the competition, I got Def Jam. So God would close one door to open up a bigger door. So
I'd have to say, F you. Yeah. Black Bay Area.
Yeah. Well, they opened the door for me.
Sure.
You know, if I wasn't there, you know, and that's one thing, you know, always got to be there. You got to be in the comedy clubs. That's how I found out about Fridays. I was at Black Bay Area competition. I got the Def Jam show. So I was always there, you know, because I was loving what I was doing. It wasn't for money. It was for, you know, just the passion and
the
love.
Passion, yeah.
And man, doors was just opening, and then, you know, everything else came after that.
So you said it took years or a year of time, took a long time to get 3 or 4 minutes of good material.
Yeah.
Are you trying jokes out and that one sucked, I'll drop it. Yeah. This one could be better, I need to shape it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's exactly. It's like you're getting on stage and you're saying, you know, some stuff might not work, some stuff works better, and then you get on stage, something, you might say something else to lead you somewhere else, and it's just honing it, and every night, over the years, you hone out material and stuff to talk about, and just, you know, it takes time, but, you know, now it's a little bit quicker, but back then it was definitely a
So when you do stand-up now, how much time do you do?
On stage, I'll do like 10, well, 15, 20 minutes if I go just hop into, on a comedy club. But on stage, I do like an hour, 20 at the most hour.
That's a long time.
That's a
long time to have to be funny.
Yeah, yeah. I try to keep it just at an hour, just in an hour. But yeah, when I'm doing my shows in the theaters and around the country, I try to do an hour show. And then I have an opening act for does like 15, 20 minutes. And then I do an hour and that's it. But if I'm really rolling, I'll do an hour 20, something like that.
So you have like kind of a skeleton of ideas. Okay, I'm going to go to this one, then I'll go to that one. But then you fill it in with whatever is going on.
Yeah, yeah. I have like a structure and then I'll, you know, whatever is going on in the world and or you know, whatever I want to talk about. But I have a set show
yeah,
that I want to do.
The topics and the points that you want to go to.
Yeah.
Because it's funny you mentioned you, like in kind of doing Michael Jackson imitations and that sort of thing. Like in Rush Hour, you sing Don't Stop to Get Enough and it's like really good. Like do you do that sort of stuff too? Do you do imitations sometimes?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely do that and then talk about, you know, me and Michael, you know, hanging out or something like that. And I definitely do imitations of Bill Clinton, going to Africa with Bill Clinton. I do a little bit of his voice. I do, like, Tucker, so good to see you. Good to see you. God bless you. God bless America. You know, I got a few impressions.
That was great, man. And so you went to Africa with Bill Clinton.
I went to Africa with Bill Clinton. I did some great trips.
As you do. How did this come across?
Oh, man, it was, I met him years ago. Jesse Jackson introduced me to him when he was president. And we became, you know, went on some great trips with him and became friends with him. And he was just, it was great, man. I mean, he was unbelievable. I mean,
were you guys over there doing like
humanitarian stuff?
Work?
You know, that's what really wanted, you know, made me want to do stuff and help people any way I could because I was going on these great trips with Bono and we went with Bill Clinton.
Let me just throw that Bono.
Yeah, yeah, it was just great, man. Oprah Winfrey opened up a school in South Africa, Colin Powell, and then my mom was like, why don't you start your own foundation? Why don't you do some stuff too? So I said, yeah, you're right, because I saw so much and it broadened my perspective of, you know, what's going on around the world, you know. You know, going to countries where people don't have clean water because an animal died in the water supply, or, you know, just so much sickness, or going into the orphanage full of babies with HIV or AIDS. And, you know, it just brought my perspective of, man, there's so much need to be done, it could be done, just showing up, you know, in the world. So that really changed me in a good way. To do something, you know.
So when you went to, like, there's a couple of things that you said I want to go back to, but when you say you went to Africa with Bill, are you going there to do, like, are you doing a show? Or are you just kind of, here's Chris Tucker and Bill, and you're going to a school to, you know, say hi to the kids? Or
yeah, I was with Bill Clinton, we was going to a few countries for, you know, his foundation. I think he was just getting ready to start doing the Clinton Global Initiative. Mm-hmm. And that was for getting affordable HIV pills for people in a lot of people in Africa, around the world too, and in the Caribbeans, all over. He started that, you know, trying to get it affordable back then and save so many lives. And then Bono, I think, was the same, forgiving the debt of all these countries in Africa and all around the world that owed us money, forgiving that debt and then giving them money so they can afford, you know, drugs, anything they needed, like mosquito nets and stuff like that. So I was on these great trips and these big, you know, things, you know, helped saving a lot of lives. So it was great.
But you're there just kind of like I guess I'm asking, when you go out to Africa and you go to a certain area, it's just to basically shake hands and create awareness?
Oh, yeah. 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 I was a part of it, you know, in a way of learning and also showing the support of what they were doing and supporting it, you know. Mm-hmm. So with Bono, we traveled to Ethiopia, Uganda, Luanda. President Clinton was in Luanda and a few other places. And just there learning and just, you know, every place is not like America, you know. Every place don't have it as good as we do in a lot of ways. So yeah, man, I learned a lot. So that made me want to do more. Start here, you know, at home, and then, you know, do more eventually.
It's interesting. I was in India 10 years ago. And I'll never forget, like, as we're driving down the road, and it's, you know, typical third world country. It's super packed with all these ramshackle vehicles. And standing in the median was, I'll never forget, a baby with a diaper on. By himself, just standing there. Wow. Like, whose baby is this? And cars are driving, and it's just, you see images like that, and you're like, oh my gosh. And you said, like, thank God we live in America, when you see those type of images.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you see stuff that, you know, you really, really takes you back, and it changes you. It changes you in a good way, I think. You know, you appreciate, you know, what we have here in this country. And then also you say, you know, if I got it this good, if we could help, we could help somebody. And we all need help. We all need help. We all are vulnerable. So, you know, from our, you know, thank God for our families first and then, you know, schools and teachers. And, you know, we had so much help along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great to try to help others because in the same time you're helping yourself because you learn so much.
When you go to like Africa with Bono, or is it like, are you on a list of celebrities that like, oh, Chris is open to it, or is he calling you saying, come with me to Ethiopia?
Yeah, it's like Kevin Spacey was on one trip and we were both doing impressions of Bill Clinton. We took turns doing it in each country in Africa.
And, that's a bit you need to do. You need to do Kevin Spacey doing Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think he came up with that big idea before his show, House of Cards. Was it? Not House of Cards.
House of Cards. Yeah.
That was before he did that show. And then next thing you know, he
came up
with that
one. From there.
And he was, you know.
When you go there, do people speak English at all?
Oh, yeah. South Africa, we went. Definitely English. All over Africa, they speak English. Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing, like you said, with like the HIV pills and stuff, just how rampant. I don't think people here understand like how bad it is in Africa.
Yeah.
Because HIV in the States is almost like under control at this point.
Yeah.
But not there.
Yeah. Back then, it was, you know, it's come a long way now. People, you know, have the medication now, have the pills now to live longer and to live with HIV and stuff. But back then, they didn't have it. They were so high, the pharmaceutical companies were so high, the prices were so high, and that's what one of the things Bill Clinton wanted to lower that and then get money to buy those and get those all around the Africa and all over the world, wherever they needed to go.
So that made a big difference then?
Oh, yeah. He saved it definitely saved a lot of lives. And a lot of people, helped, so it was great.
When you mentioned Oprah as well, what'd you do with her?
Oh, she opened up. Oprah Winfrey opened up a school in Africa. I was there, South Africa. It was so beautiful. All these girls' school. I mean, it was all these young girls, and a lot of them I see to this day. Sometimes I see them with her. They go to schools all over America. Go to Howard and go to Spelman, and they go to Harvard and all over. So she really she's really a special person. And I remember being at the school when they were young girls, and all these they're grown women now. Sometimes I see them, you know, and she changed lives. She's changing lives, so it's great.
Chris, I've got a school.
Yeah, that's right. It's done. We did it. You sure did? And it was a good party, too. We were over there, so she threw a good birthday party one time. I think that was separate from the school.
Yeah, birthday party. For you?
Throw the great parties. No, not for me. It was just for everybody.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
You mentioned the Chris Tucker Foundation. We're talking about the camp spot. What are some of the other charities that you support with the foundation?
Oh, you know, we do a homeless ministry with my church here in Atlanta. We do homeless ministry. Then we do Boys and Girls Club. And then we do scholarships for kids who want to go to college, who can't, might need a little help. And we try to provide that and get them in school all over wherever they want to go. We try to help, you know, each year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have a lot of different arms inside of this foundation, a lot of different places that you help and work with.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, people always asking us and anything. We might see something on the news and we'll do something for that, you know, so whatever, wherever we can. And I try to get as much money as I can from friends and whoever, golf tournaments. And we have a golf tournament coming up August 26th. And all my friends come, a lot of celebrities and a lot of businesses, corporations come and play. We raise money that way too. And we try to keep it going.
Who's some good golfers that you wouldn't expect to be?
Oh, man. All the athletes are pretty good. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard came last year. He's a good golfer. And, so many great ones. Dominique Wilkerson. Marcus Allen. And so many great ones coming. We're trying to get a lot of people to come this year, too. Ray Allen. And so many great guys.
Like you said, all those athletes are always good.
Oh, they're all good. Ken Griffey Jr. is great. I heard he's a great golfer. And Bo Jackson. I went to his golf tournament this year. He's a great golfer. I mean, these guys hit it a mile away, so.
Are you good?
I'm okay. Yeah. I'm all right. No. I'm a scratch golfer. Yeah. I scratch a lot when I'm on the course. I'm a little scratch. Now, I just like to have fun, so
yeah.
It's good.
Well, that's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, yeah. I love the game. I like to get out in the wilderness, you know, get out in the woods. I hit my ball in the woods for a reason. I like to go in the woods and search for the ball and just get one with nature.
Yeah,
I don't want to hit it straight all the time. That's boring.
Hole-in-ones is for chumps. Yeah.
I like to hit it off the rock and bounce back. And I do that on purpose.
You know what else is good? Hitting in the water.
I like to hear that. I like to hear that. That's why I do that.
I almost said I shot out a snot rocket on that one. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I love it, man. I used to skip rocks. And I had to
sploosh.
Yeah, man.
So, I mean, that's important because it seems to me like looking at your career bio and you did movie after movie after movie, and now you're picking your spots, like Silver Lining Playbook was huge. Yeah. But then it's a couple of years before you do the next movie. Is that kind of your mindset now? It's not so much about work.
Yeah, definitely. It's not, to me, it's like I'm busy all the time. I'm doing either stand-up comedy or, you know, something with the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm traveling all around the world. So I'm always doing something, always busy. But, you know, I still love movies. And we got a lot of stuff, you know, I'm producing and writing some stuff now. So that'll be coming out, you know, hopefully soon. And but I'm always staying busy and creative and doing stuff that, you know, I want to do. So it's great.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. It's a good place to be where you can kind of pick and choose and do what you want to do.
Yeah, it is. It really is. You know, you just, and growing as a person, I think I've grown up, you know, grew a lot, you know, as, you know, when I was a kid, I started in the business to now. So it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Just the last few questions. Who do you like nowadays that are great stand-up comedians that you think are quite funny?
Oh, I love Dave Chappelle. I think he's funny. Chris Rock, I think
he's got Dave just kind of, is he back now? Is he gone?
Oh, he's back.
Yeah.
Dave got a special now on Netflix, two specials, and I think he got another one coming. He's, you know, so he's back doing, you know, doing his stand-up, and, you know, it's a lot of great guys out there. So,
is it Chris Rock?
Yeah, Chris Rock is funny and great. You know, it's a lot of great peers, so many of them, so it's great, yeah.
It really is all in delivery, too, right? Like, if you read a joke on paper, like a Chris Rock joke, it's not funny, but his delivery of it.
It's all about, about delivery, you know, and that, you know, that's like working in the comedy clubs constantly and, you know, getting it to, you know, telemaking it, that joke, and getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but delivery, it's like, you know, what you say, how you say it, so, yeah.
Are you watching stuff like for material? Do you see something and go, oh, that could be funny? Or like, it's the stupid question. Where do you get your material from? But do you get it from just life?
Yeah, I get it from life. Mm-hmm. You know, everyday life, you know, pretty much I said, man, you know, I want to talk about that. I'm going to talk about that. That happened to me, you know, or I experienced that. So I get a lot of everyday life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff I see, I might, you know, find something funny in it. And I say, oh, I'm going to talk about that or something like that. But yeah, it just comes natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a natural funny guy.
Oh, thank
from
you.
From the class clown here at Columbia High School.
Yeah, this is where it all started right here.
Yeah, yeah. What's your favorite Michael Jackson song?
All of them. I love all of them. I mean, anything Michael, Thriller, I love all of them, yeah.
It's funny, we had a debate on my podcast ago, like, is there such thing as a perfect album?
Yeah.
And we went through a bunch of different albums, and there's always one song that's kind of not great, but yeah, Off the Wall and Thriller. The Lady in My Life is maybe not great, the last song on Thriller.
Oh, that's a beautiful song.
But
I
it's
love
still,
that.
Like, to me, that's the one that might not be great, but it's still an A song.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's great.
Rest are A pluses, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good one.
So, do you remember where you were when you heard that Michael passed, and how did his death affect you?
I was here in Atlanta when I heard he passed, and it was like a brother passing. Mm-hmm. I think it was close to a brother passing. You know, because he was an idol, hero, and you know, somebody I looked up to from a little kid, and somebody you know you felt like you knew because he was a part of my life, you know, as long as I can remember, and everybody's life. So I think it was definitely sad. It was definitely sad, and I would definitely miss him, but you know, his music being played every day, and you know, you see, you know, he's living. He'll be living forever.
His legacy lives on, yeah.
His legacy definitely lives on.
The biggest drag, not the biggest drag. Obviously, I never met him personally, but from a fan standpoint, I wish he could have done one of those shows, just one at the O2.
Yeah, that would have been great. I was looking forward to trying to get out there to check him out.
Yeah, because when you see the This Is It documentary, every song had a huge production piece to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever it may be, and I was like, oh. Just yeah. one show would have been great just to see what he was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy watching This Is It because he shows so many different sides of himself, his business side and then everything else, his work ethic, how hard he worked and stuff like that. So I thought that was just great to see.
I loved, I still use the quote, it's like somebody screws up and it's like, that's okay, that's why we're rehearsing.
Yeah.
That's why it's called
that's
rehearsal.
That's right. That's right.
You can fuck up, it's okay.
That's right, it's rehearsal. That's why we rehearse.
That's good. Yeah. You can do a good Michael Jackson talking wise too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Chris, with all the great parts that you've played, is there like a dream role, a part or somebody that you wish you could play?
I wish I could play Michael Jackson, but I don't know if I could do it because he's such a big iconic figure. But he would be somebody, if anybody, I would say that would be, if I could do that, that would be great. But that's just far-fetched.
But the thing, too, with Michael, like, you did a great imitation of his voice. Soft-spoken, but there is a little bit of a Midwestern accent to it as well, because that's where he's obviously from Indiana, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you have that down.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, it show a different side of his business side and his perfectionist. There's a lot, I think, it could be done in a movie showing his brilliance and his...
Did you ever do a Michael Jackson impression for Michael Jackson?
I think I did. I think he probably laughed at me or something. I don't think so. No, I was too scared
to do
it. But I've done it on stage. He's seen me do it on stage, though, in Def Jam comedy and stuff like that. So he's seen me.
So what kind of a bit would you do in Def Jam comedy of Michael Jackson?
Well, when I did that was 92. And I had a bit about what if Michael Jackson was a pimp. And then I went on and on, him and Tito riding in the car. And he's like, slow down, Tito. Slow down, Tito, damn. And then it goes into he getting out and all that stuff. So, yeah, I had a little bit.
He's seeing the chicks on the side of the
street. Yeah, yeah, he's seeing the chick, and he wanted to get his money from the girl. So this was so it was funny. I think he saw that one probably back in the day or something.
I do one impression, the drummer from Metallica, Lars.
Oh, yeah.
And I do it for him sometimes if we've been drinking. And he looks at me like I'm insane. But I'm like, dude, you sound like this. You do know you sound like this. What's going on, Chris? It's good to see you, man. It's cool. Nice watch you have on there. And he's like, I don't sound like that. You do sound like that.
You don't want to admit it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Damn, Tito.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And last question for you. What's your favorite role that you've played?
I'd say Fridays because that was one of my first co-leading roles with Ice Cube, and like I said, I was prepared for it, I was ready, and that kind of springboarded me to whatever else I wanted to do, it springboarded me to the Rush Hour, so
mm-hmm.
I would say Fridays.
Do you still like when you look at parts for acting? Are you looking to try and do more drama, or is it still do you love the good old fashioned comedies?
I like both. I like both because I started out, I did Fridays and then I did Dead Presidents. That was dramatic at Dead Presidents. So I think I could do both. I can mix them together. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing both, do some dramatic stuff, be funny in a dramatic movie, be dramatic, or just be straight out funny.
Be like dramatic in a funny movie or be funny in a dramatic movie.
Yeah, could do it all. That's it, man. Just be myself. Yeah.
I got one last question. We were talking about Rush Hour and obviously the big catchphrase was, do you hear the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Oh, yeah.
Does the studio pick these clips out, or do you know when you say that it's going to be a big thing, or like?
It's, that's something that I just, when I get the character and I know, the direction I'm going to take it, I just come up with certain things that I'm like, this is what I would say, or this is what I want to say right here. This is what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And whatever I'm feeling, then the words come after that.
Are you surprised sometimes when something like that, just a random thing that you say, becomes like a catchphrase?
Yeah, I am, but I kind of knew. Because you don't know. You just know that it might be funny, but other than that, I don't know what's gonna happen after that. Because that one, I knew that was like, I'm pissed off. I'm about to work with this guy I don't want to work with, and I don't even think he speaks English. This is what I'm thinking. So first, and I don't care if he knows I'm thinking this.
Right.
So first thing I say to him, do you speak English? Because I need to know that right away. Because if you don't, I'm pissed off.
Right.
So yeah, it's just part of, just comes out,
It's like that in wrestling sometimes, I'll say something that becomes a big catchphrase, like t-shirts and signs, and they're selling all of this different merchandise on this stupid thing that I said just as a throwaway.
Yeah.
You just never know what people are going to respond to.
Yeah, you never know. You really don't. You don't. You just try to put some good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Instead of analyzing it, just enjoy it. You know, if that's what you want to talk and do an impression of me saying that, that's fine.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's good.
All right, dude. Well, let's go talk to some kids.
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you.
I'm Detective Carter. Do you speak any English? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
All right, Chris Tucker, Celebrity Golf Classic is coming up August 25th at Stone Mountain, just outside Atlanta, Georgia. Go to ChrisTuckerFoundation.org for all the details and see how you can be a part of it. And check out Chris Tucker's new stand-up special, Chris Tucker Live. It's been a long time coming. It's streaming now on Netflix, and it's hilarious. I mean, Chris Tucker, man, he really turns it up in concert. He's still doing stand-up. If you want to see him live, follow him on the Twitter at Chris Tucker Real. All right, you hear the words that come out of my mouth. I love that line. And the comedy continues on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Sal and Brian. What is it? No, Q. Sal and Q from Impractical Jokers are going to be there. And of course, Craig Gass. All of them talk as Jericho alumni. All hilarious guys. You're going to be laughing your butt off. And there's still cabins available at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And listen, there's still cabins available, but I'm telling you, we're about to ramp it up. You know who's going to be on the cruise. Now we're going to tell you some stuff of what they're going to be doing. I got actually even some more additions. There's going to be some crazy stuff coming up. A huge main event match that I know about that you don't know about. You want to book it now, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And for as low as $150, you can hold your cabin. And once you book, remember, everything is all-inclusive. All the live wrestling matches, live podcasts, live stand-up comedy, all the rock and roll concerts, all for free. Meet and greets, pictures, autographs, all that stuff is all-inclusive. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to find out the entire lineup. You know who's going to be there. So many great, great, huge, huge names. Hall of Famers like Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Raven, Rey Mysterio, Killing the Town, live. Keeping It 100, live. Beyond the Darkness, live. Fozzy is going to be playing. We got two top 10 singles from the Judas record, so thank you so much for that. Painless made it all the way to number 7 after Judas made it to number 5. Corey Taylor is going to be playing. We got Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's greatest Ozzy tribute band. Of course, Ring of Honor presenting the Sea of Honor tournament winner gets a world title championship match later in the future. Kenny Omega is going to be there. The Young Bucks, Marty Scurll, Cody, the entire Adam Page, the entire Bullet Club, plus the Briscoe Brothers, Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, Jay Lethal, Flip Gordon, the Dogs are going to be there. And we got Brandi Rhodes. We got Melissa Santos. We got Mandy Leon. We got Kelly Klein. We got some beautiful girls coming on board. And they can wrestle and kick some ass as well. So don't you dare miss it. Go to Chris Jericho. Cruise.com now and book your cabin. You got it? Thank you so much. Hey, listen, I want you guys to have a great weekend. And when we come back next week on Wednesday, Wade Barrett, Stu Bennett, my old protege from the NXT days, he's got a new movie out coming out called Vengeance. Wade Barrett is coming back. We're going to talk about all the great times we had in WWE. He's a hilarious guy. You are going to love it. But in the meantime, in between time, have a great weekend. Stay hungry. Stay hard. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah, boy. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, I got your money. And I don't appreciate you sending your punk-ass, bust-ass, Jerry Curl-ass friends to shoot at me and my homie. They like to got dealt with. I was just bullshitting. And you know this, man.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.